before by just presenting the reason for the renormalization of the mass. And then I'm going to discuss the relation between the renormalization, the way it has been presented here in the T1 course, and renormalization theory in the spirit of Ken Wilson that you have seen in the statistical mechanical course. You see that two different aspects in fact of the same idea and the same formalism.
Okay, so first, now, let's discuss briefly massive Phi-4 theory. Okay, so we have seen that the idea of the renormalization theory now is to introduce some big cutoff. I'm going to use some ultraviolet cutoff that have to be sent to infinity. But for the sake of the calculation, it will be kept finite. And to construct a theory via a renormalized action S of phi, which is of the general form A over 2 d phi squared plus B over 2 phi squared plus C over 2 phi to the 4, that contains all the terms that I like to have and that are consistent with power counting and renormalizability. And we have to check which term have to be taken in the functional integral, for instance, in order to have a series that is well defined with finite correlation function, Green's function, etc., observable at a physical cutoff, or a physical scale. So we have both K, a physical cutoff, and mu, a renormalization scale. Mu is kept finite. Okay. And then all the quantity will be expressed in terms of renormalized parameters. And we have seen that for the massless theory, there is only one, the theory may depend only on one parameter, which is the renormalized Kublik constant. And we have seen that in order to have so the four-point function that is finite when expressed in the renormalized Kublik constant at one loop when lambda goes to infinity, we have to fine-tune this coefficient so that A equals 0. I'm sorry, A equal 1, of course. We have seen that B has to be adjusted to be minus G renormalized 1 half 1 over 4 pi squared lambda squared. And C has to be renormalized as GR plus GR squared 3 half 1 over 4 pi squared log of lambda squared divided by mu squared. Okay. Up to now, I will set h bar equal 1 because as we have seen, in fact, everything is a function of h bar times gr. And once you, I hope now that you have understood that everything here takes into account just the one loop diagram. So it's term of order 1 over h bar. Okay. So this is 1, this is 1, this is. Okay. So now, what about the massive theory? What about the massive theory? Well, the massive theory is almost the same. And as a first step, the four-point divergence, the divergence of four-point functions depends on G, but it doesn't depend on the mass. In fact, it's just a log. So in fact, we can keep C to be GR plus GR squared, 1/2, well, 3/2, sorry. Same. Squared That's because the divergence of the four-point function is proportional to log lambda, but no mass. Okay. So now, for A, it turns out that we don't have to, there is no field renormalization needed. So the question is about the mass, of course. If we want to have a series that is massive, it means that the bare phi squared term has to be different from the one that enforces the fact that the mass is zero in the physical theory. Okay. So in order to understand what we have to do, we have to look at the following diagram, which was a diagram that was the reason why the mass gets renormalized. This tadpole diagram, which in fact now is a function of, it's a function of lambda, but now let us consider that it is a function of B. For this, so I set A equals zero. These diagrams don't change, so I'm simply considering integral d4k 2 pi to the power 4, 1 over k squared plus b. And I'm integrating for all the momenta less than lambda. Okay, so we have seen that there is, if b equals 0, there is a divergence that is lambda squared over 4 pi squared, I think. Let me check. Yes. 1 over 4 pi squared. But if b is different from 0, there is a correction to that, which will be subdominant. And you can get this correction simply by expanding some sense. We are assuming that the momenta are large, so you can write this as 1 over k squared minus b over k squared squared plus, etc. And this gives a lambda. And this gives a log lambda with a coefficient minus b. So in fact, there is a minus b. And if you compute the thing, you find minus b over 2 pi squared log lambda squared. So there is a subdominant term which is proportional to b, which means, yes. So this means, in particular, that the physical mass of the theory, if I adjust b to be just the one for the mass equals 0, and if now b is, so if b at is 0 plus something over the gr, the physical mass will contain a correction that contains a log of lambda. So it requires an additional renormalization. Okay? So, in order to do that, let me introduce, so I have GR, let me introduce another parameter that I'm going to call the renormalized mass. And at the moment, I'm just defining. And so this renormalized mass at three level, so no quantum correction, no infinite divergence, will be the mass of the series. So I assume that if I want to have a series that is massive, then B at three level, classical theory, MR is the mass of the classical theory. Okay? But then I have to introduce the counter terms. So I have to introduce something like GR. Correction. So we have seen that there's a correction which is minus 1 over 2, 1 over 4 pi squared, lambda squared. That is the correction when the physical mass is equal to 0. And if the physical mass is not equal to 0, I'm going to introduce a term that takes care of this divergence. Therefore, that is proportional to B, which is proportional to MR at three level. So it's not a big deal to show that what you have to introduce is MR squared over 4 pi squared times a log of lambda squared. Okay? And again, we have the same problem than for the four-point function. We have to introduce a scale to take care of this mu. So, well, the natural solution is just to take the same renormalization, mu. Okay, so that's my definition of the renormalized mass. Okay, you could have taken another one, but that's my choice. This is a parameter I called renormalized mass, MR, and this is the relation between the phi squared term in the action and MR. And now let us compute this. So if you compute this, so it's not very complicated to compute what's going on, and you find that the renormalized two-point function, irreducible, is now, instead of being p squared, it's p squared plus mr squared. This is three-level classical results. And then you get a correction. And what is the correction? The correction is plus gr. And then, well, the log, this divergence log lambda will be cancelled by this divergence log lambda here. What remains is the term proportional to mr squared. There is a 1/2, there is 1 over 4 pi squared, and you get a log of mr squared divided by mu squared. Okay, that's because this diagram contains now this with a b. So it contains a log of lambda, and in fact, it's a log of lambda divided by b, by the scaling. So no surprise, there is a log of mr squared divided by mu squared. Plus contribution of two loop diagrams. Okay? So now we see that our theory is massive. The two point function is not p squared anymore, it's p squared plus something. And this is the physical mass. Okay. So you see that. With this definition of the renormalization mass, the physical mass is non-zero. But it depends in a, it's different from the physical mass. So if we had chosen as a counter term mu lambda divided by the renormalized mass, then we would have had renormalized, that the renormalized mass is equal to the physical mass. But I keep this choice, so this is a choice, which is convenient to study the limit when MR goes to zero. Because then you see it's a polynomial in MR for the counter term. It makes things more convenient. And it, voilà, it's also convenient to study, to compare with Wilson renormalization group results. So that's why I'm doing that. Okay. And finally, let me just say one thing. We have seen that we have defined a beta function for I don't have the result, but We have seen that we have defined a renormalization group beta function. Beta, which in fact relative to G of GR, which is defined by how does the effective renormalized complete constant of when you vary the renormalization scale depends on the scale. And we have seen that this beta function is equal to GR squared 3, 1 over 4 pi squared, to the factor 2, perhaps. No factor 2. And plus, yes, okay. And in the same way, we can define a renormalization group beta function for the mass by saying how the renormalized mass changes with mu for a kept physical theory. So in this formulation, how do you have to change MR with mu so that the physical mass, that is the physical observable, is not changed. Okay? And in fact, it's better to write the ratio of MR squared divided by mu squared because it's dimensionless. And to write a beta function exactly in the same formula by saying how mu of d mu of this tr vary with mu when mu goes to zero, when mu varies. Okay. And that's an exercise that is going to be. Okay. So, and again, this renormalization of the mass is enough to make the four-point function finite. Now the four-point function will depend on p squared and mr and all the other one, but that's everything is stays finite. Yes?
Are these beta functions only trustworthy for small couplings or something?
Pardon?
Beta functions, do they have some regime of validity?
Yeah, this is a calculation at one loop.
Yeah.
That's a one loop result. So this results in this, what's called the renormalization group flow, because when you change mu, there is a flow in the space of coupling that is generated by this. Given by this form, it's valid when g is small. When g becomes larger, you have to add the contribution of the two-loop diagrams, or the three-loop diagrams, and there is a general theory of renormalization that tells you that this can be done to all order. So I won't speak about that because it's too advanced, but I can just mention that there is a general theory. Of normalization that was divided in at least in perturbation theory. It was a mathematical constructed in the 50s and the 60s, so it's quite old and well established. And it is called, well, the acronym is BPHC theorem. So B is for Bogolyubov, the famous Russian physicist Bogolyubov. Parashuk, who's one of his collaborators. Hepp, Switz. Theoretical physicist who turned to biophysics, but and Zimmermann, who I think died, but who is a German mathematical physicist. Yes?
Could you please explain again how gamma 2 was calculated, how the physical mass was calculated from the parameters?
How the mass is calculated, yeah. How I do this calculation. Mm-hmm. So you want me to do it?
Just outline what's the...
Well, that's simply that now the two-point function is given by p squared plus b plus b squared over 2 times
T of B and lambda. Now you express B in terms of MR with this choice of MR renormalized. You re-express T in terms of lambda, B, and then you have some subdominant term that you can neglect in the large. So these are subdominant. The lambda goes to infinity limit. Okay? And again, you replace, since this is a contribution to one loop, you can replace B here and here by its zero loop term, which is MR. You turn the crank and you end up with this. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay? So you do this and you replace, expand. First order. Okay. And take the limit. take the limit. Okay. Good. So I hope to have convince you that at one loop, renormalization, perturbative renormalization works. And there are general theorems that are much more, many more involved mathematically that state that this idea can be made to work at any order in perturbation theory. So the idea of changing the coefficient A, B, C by adding terms, so re-expressing those in terms of renormalized parameter, renormalized Coupling constant and renormalized mass, adding the fact that there is also such a coefficient that has to be here for the field renormalization, and that done appropriately, so adding counter term over the GR squared, GR 3, 4, etc., even so, you can obtain Green's function for the series that are finite in terms of the renormalized parameter when lambda goes to infinity. Okay, yes?
I wanted to ask, could you please elaborate a little on how this methodology is connected with the Wilsonian renormalization?
That's what I'm going to do.
Okay, so
now, what is the relation which is this kind of, let us say, a perturbative normalization? The perturbative renormalization in the framework of basically QFT and high energy physics, because that's a formula that are built consistent theory. And what is the relation with this and the Wilsonian renormalization group that was devised for basically condensed matter problems? Well, in a way, I can explain with words that these are two aspects of the same thing. So let me write here some kind of energy scale or inverse distance, which would be a term of energy in the from the point of view of some high energy physics theory, but it will be inverse distances in the framework of a condensed matter problem where you know the physical. So what we did in high energy is that we have a renormalization scale mu, which is the scale at which is a physical scale. So
That's a scale at which we control things. We make experiments, we develop a theory. So the quantity we measure or we compute and we want to compare with our calculation are quantity defined at this energy scale. And now there is an high energy scale, so a regulator scale, that's kind of lambda, and I have no control of it. Either I wanted to send it to infinity, or that's because I have a theory that has some validity in some energy scale, and beyond that, I don't know which the physics is, there will be higher fees, higher mass particles. And, well, the ultimate cutoff in quantum theory is the Planck's mass, where we have some hints or some educated guesses of what is the theory that defines quantum gravity, but we don't know very well what to compute with that, or we have some partial answer. And perhaps, simply, quantum mechanics will break down and some other theory will have to be devised at this scale with completely different physical principles. So anyway, that's an energy regulator, and we have no control on what's going on. And we don't want to have control. We want to see whether we can construct a physical theory at this physical mass that do not depend on what's going on there. OK? No control of it. So control, no control. OK, so that's high energy physics world, if you want. Well, by high energy, it means also the world of quantum electrodynamics, of what's going in quantum optics, where people deal with calculation field calculation in QED to compare with experiments that takes place in labs of optics, quantum information, that kind. So that's high energy physics and below. Okay. Now, in condensed matter physics, or in statistical physics, we have a microscopic scale, and that's where we have control of it. So this microscopic scale is in inverse distance, so basically it's A minus 1, where A is the order of the angstrom if you are dealing with magnetic materials, the order of the size of the distance between the atoms. In some soft matter system like liquid crystals, the microscopic scales at which the physics is defined is much larger because it involves macromolecules and things interesting are going on when you see how these macromolecules aggregates. And okay, but anyway, there is a microscopic scale, and it's under control. So it's under control. And here it's, we don't know what it is. Here it's under control, at least theoretically. We have a model for that. For the Ising model, we have a Ising model. And we want to see what's going on at a large scale. So L, so at a distance energy scale, L minus 1. And we have no control. We want to know, deduce from the microscopic physics, what's going on there. So that's Wilsonian renormalization group. We start from a theory with a cutoff. We integrate what's going on, the moles here. And we get something here. Here, seemingly, that's the opposite. But in fact, we are doing the same thing. We start from a bare theory defined as some cutoff. We want to define the theory at these physical scales, and basically what we are doing by this is that computing directly, but that's equivalent to integrate the degrees of freedom. And then we adjust this so that this is what we want. Here, we know what's going on here, and we want to see what's happening there and whether it's something interesting or not. But that's the same philosophy, you see. Simply, that's the same theoretical idea going from high energies to low energy or from small distance to large distance. But it's used in this way in order to get something here that is universal. And here it's used in this way to see whether we get something universal out of this. Okay. So
is
that's just.
Correlation length?
Pardon?
Is there correlation length?
Is there?
L. No,
L is a scale at which you want to understand the physics. So, indeed, if you are away from a critical point, you can do this physical analysis of Wilson. And when you reach a scale that is equal to the correlation length, then here the physics starts to become trivial. Because beyond that, there is no correlations at large distance. So, in Wilsonian normalization group, you start from a point, from some physics, you go there, and at some point, you reach a point where the physics becomes trivial. That's the correlation length. And if you never reach the correlation length and go from there to infinity, it means that you are at a critical point, and you have a scale invariant theory. Okay? Okay, so that's the general picture. And now I want to start to give you an example of a Wilsonian normalization group calculation performed in a QFT setting or using what we learned by using QFT. So this will not be very different from what you did in the StatMech course. I have not looked exactly at how things were presented. But you will recognize what we have been doing. Perhaps I will be doing things more slowly. Perhaps I will be doing things more carefully. But anyway, so you and the purpose is to see the connection is with what we did here. OK, so I'm doing this calculation. I'm not doing to do an exact calculation, but that's very difficult. But I'm doing tweak an approximate renormalization group calculation in an approximation that equals the local potential. I'm going to explain what this is. The local potential approximation. And rather than being a Wilsonian, it's a bit more called in a renormalization group scheme that's called the Wetterich renormalized effective potential. Effective potential. Rather than what's called the Wilson-Pulchinski scheme. So it will not be completely exactly what you have been doing, but at one loop there is no real difference. Okay, but this becomes a difference. The difference becomes effective. Difference becomes important at two loop order. And I'm going to do a calculation valid only at one loop again. So local potential approximation and one loop approximation. Okay, so let me start from a QFT with an action of the form integral ddx. I'm going to do the calculation in d dimension, not in 4 dimension. And this is the usual d mu phi squared. But I take a general potential v of phi, where this potential is a general function. So V of phi will be of the form. So let us take it to be just a polynomial. Mm-hmm. What were the choice I did? Just to have to find notation. Well, I can write this as, I don't know, kappa 2 over 2 phi 2 plus kappa 4 over factorial 4 phi to the 4 plus kappa 6 to over factorial 6 phi to the 6 plus, etc. Okay. And simply, I'm taking an even potential for simplicity. Okay. And now, I want to perform a randomization group calculation. So the randomization group calculation will be performed by stating that I use a sharp cutoff again. The momenta I'm going to use are going to be less than some ultraviolet cutoff. And my randomization group procedure will be the following. I start from, in the K space, in the momentum space, so the momenta are defined in some ball of radius lambda. And I'm going to integrate all the momenta between lambda and lambda over b. So I integrate over. So my procedure will be first, integrate over the momenta between lambda and lambda divided by b. B being a rescaling factor. And in practice, b will be taken to be 1 plus some ds, rescaling factor. So I'm using a thin momentum shell. Second, I'm going to rescale the field phi and the momenta so that we end up with the original theory. And compute the new normalized action. So that's a general feature of performing a normalization group calculation, as you have seen. You integrate over some high energy modes, or you integrate over, you make an average over what's going on at small distance. Then you rescale things to compare to the original theory. And then you compare and you see what's our normalization group flow. So we are going to do that. And in order to do that, we are going to use the fact that at one loop, we know the results of the quantization. So we know what's the effective action. We know the formula for the effective action. And remember, the formula for the effective action is the original action for the theory plus, again, h bar is 0, so it's 1 half trace of log of the action of my action. And the action of my action in that case is just the operator minus the Laplace operator plus, in that case, this is the second derivative of the potential. plus high order terms. Yes?
I just can't read what you wrote, b equals 1 plus.
It's just, it means just that I'm going to do the calculation for a thin shell. But,
yeah.
Or a thin shell. OK? And so that's a general result for the effective potential. And so phi is a background field. It's a classical variable. And but now, of course, if I am computing with a cutoff lambda, this has to be estimated with a given cutoff. So it's, and this is a, for phi, a general function, this is a complicated function. You have seen that it's the sum of the contribution of all the irreducible one-loop diagram. So it's a non-trivial function of phi. It's a function of phi. It depends on phi at all the different points. OK, so now let us assume that. So that's the kind of approximation that I'm going to group in the name local potential approximation. So I'm not going to justify them very carefully, but you are going to see the trick. So assume that the background field phi of x very slowly with respect to lambda and in practice and 1 over the physical mass of the of my theory. So that I can treat in this calculation phi. So I can treat in this calculation phi of x is locally a constant. Okay. So then I'm going to make approximation for this. I'm going to make an approximation. I'm going to say that trace of logarithm of minus lambda plus phi. Okay, which as you have seen, the trace is something like the integral of the matrix element at point x of this big operator of phi. I have a highly non-local operator. And I take the sum of its diagonal element. But if phi is locally constant, basically it means that when I'm estimating this matrix element, I'm going to replace the space-dependent phi by its value at the point x. So I'm going to replace this by dd of x, x log of minus lambda plus the second derivative of the potential taken at 5x. Or if you want, this is x0, this is x0, this is x0. That's a Laplacian with respect to x, if you are careful. Yeah, that's a better notation. X0. You see. So I replace the logarithm operator that depends on the value field everywhere to just this operator taken at the value x0 of the point where I estimate. So that's an approximation of locality. I can treat treat it locally as a constant. OK, so that's an approximation that I'm not going to justify. But as a physicist, this sounds to make sense. In fact, it will make sense. OK, and then I can compute this, because now this approximation, so again, this is always computed with a given cutoff lambda. The theory with a cutoff. Again, now this is much easier to compute because this is going to be integral dd of x naught. And we have seen that now I have the logarithm of an operator that is invariant by translation. So I can replace it by diagonalize it in momentum space. And what I get is integral of a ddk divided by 2p to the power d times the logarithm of k squared plus the second derivative of the field phi taken at the point x naught. Okay? Form the momenta that are less than lambda. And if you are worried about the fact that I have the logarithm of something that dimension of a mass, of a momentum squared, in fact, if you normalize things properly, this is divided by lambda squared so that this is dimensionless. Okay. So this object is taken to be, but that's an approximation, replaced by this one. So now you see that this the effective potential of the full quantum theory can be viewed as a classical action plus something that amounts to the integral over all the modes inside the ball. Okay. So that's the result for the full quantum theory. So now, how are we going to do this with Wilsonian representation? So instead of integrating over all the modes to get the full quantum effective action, what's going on when we integrate only on a momentum shell? That's it. Well, that's easy to see. You replace this integral over the whole ball by the integral over the momentum shell. So now, in my renormalization group transformation, scheme, when I integrate over all the momenta k that are between lambda and lambda 1 minus some ds, where s is small, so s is small, ds is a small quantity. Okay. Then I start from an action S of phi, and I replace it by a renormalized action S prime of phi. So this is a renormalized action for the theory with momentum k prime. So this is a renormalized action defined for a momentum k less than lambda. And now I have a renormalized action for the theory which is defined for momenta less than a renormalized cutoff lambda prime, which is, of course, lambda 1 minus ds. And this renormalized action is given by the classical contribution S of phi plus the contribution in this integral of the integral over the momenta of all the one-loop diagrams, but for momenta in the momentum scale. So I get a factor 1/2. I get an integral d over d x naught over my space. And then I integrate over my momenta in the momentum scale between lambda and lambda prime of log of k squared plus second derivative of phi of x naught. Now it's capital phi of x naught divided by lambda squared. Okay. So you see that this amounts to replace the potential V of phi by a potential V prime of phi. Okay. And the relation between the potential V and the that's a very bad notation because I have second derivative and I have a prime here. So let me call this S effective. Okay. Okay. So what is this effective potential V effective of phi in this approximation? This is the original potential plus 1/2. And if I integrate in a small, ball, the calculation gets simpler because I get the volume of the ball in D dimension. So something that I'm going to call the SD, where SD is the volume of the unit sphere in RD. So it's a D minus one sphere. Okay. Times ds, there is a d lambda to the power d. That's a volume. This is a volume of the shell. Okay. And then, why did I wrote a k? It's 2 pi to the power d. And then you have a 1 over 2 pi to the power d. And then what you get is a logarithm of this for k in the shell. But in the shell, k is equal to lambda squared. So what you get is log of 1 plus lambda minus 2 second derivative of v, the original V, taken here. Okay. And so I get a 2 lambda D and if I am not mistaken, a usual formula, the volume of the sphere of dimension d minus 1, so perhaps it's better to write it as d minus 1 here, because that's the sphere of the volume of the d minus 1 dimensional sphere. The result of s d minus 1 is 2 pi times d over 2 divided by gamma of d over 2. I think that's this formula. And you can check that I don't remember if it's d or d minus 1. OK, but you can check. If I take d equal 2 means that I should get the volume of the circle, which is 2 pi. So for d equal 2, I get 2 times pi 2 pi divided by gamma of 1, so I get 2 pi. I'm fine. So I think that's a correct calculation. Okay. Anyway. Good. Oops. What's going on? Ah. No. There is something going on. Yes. Okay. So, we have performed the first step of our renormalization group calculation. Now, we have an effective theory. Divided by an effective action S effective of phi, which is integral d dx 1/2 of d phi squared plus v effective of phi. But this effective theory is defined with a effective new cutoff regulator lambda prime equal lambda equal lambda times 1 minus ds. And I want to compare this effective action with the original action. For that, I have to perform the second step. So I had performed step one. Now I have to perform step two. Rescale the x, the momenta, and the field so that I can compare with the theory given by an action S of phi with the cutoff lambda. So for that, of course, what I have to do? I have to rescale k into k by defining a new k. What's the notation? That's always a bit. I have to define my scaling so that k, my new k, let us say renormalized, is the old k divided by 1 minus ds. Because in that case, my k renormalized will be less than lambda. Okay? K here, let's now define this theory with k less than lambda times 1 minus ds. So my k renormalized is less than lambda. Okay. But then this means that I am changing the x's here, because the momenta and the x are changed into a new x renormalized, if you want, equal x 1 minus ds. So I have rescaled the x's. And if I have rescaled the x's, I change this. So I have to rescale the field. I have to change phi into a phi renormalized, which is, well, it's easy to see, 1 minus ds to the power 2 minus d over 2. So that 2 minus 1 over 2 or plus, that's always kind of mistakes that I'm doing. So, times phi. And let me just check. I have 1 plus epsilon times, I think that's correct. So let us write this as 1 plus epsilon to the power minus d minus 2 over 2. Okay. And you can check that if you do this permutation, S effective of phi can be rewritten. That's an identity as S renormalized of phi renormalized, which is still on the form. I just make a change of variable. So, and I make the change of variables in the x and in the phi, so that this became the same. So I get 1/2 d over dx renormalized of phi renormalized, the same, squared. And then I have a v renormalized, if you want, of phi renormalized. Okay? So what is this V renormalized? Well, it's V effective is given by the original potential plus a small correction over the ds. But now, see, I have changed phi into phi plus ds times something. I get a contribution that comes from the rescaling. So I get that this, now, this V renormalized of phi renormalized is... Well, there is a term that comes from the rescaling in the original potential. Well, first I get the original potential, V of phi renormalized. And then I get a contribution proportional to ds. What is this ds? Or d capital S? That's a small s, or is that a small s? Okay. That's a small s. Okay, well, you find that this is, there is a factor that comes from the fact that I have rescaled phi, and there is a factor. Well, first I have rescaled x, so there is a factor d. I get a factor d times v phi renormalized. There is a factor that comes from the rescaling of phi, which will involve a derivative of v. So I get a v prime, and I get a minus d minus 2 over 2 phi renormalized v prime of phi renormalized. That's the derivative of the potential. Okay. So these are the terms that just come from the rescaling of the classical action. And I have this term proportional to ds. And in this set proportional to ds, I do not have to care about the difference between phi and phi renormalized because it's a next order correction. And so I get, and if I am... finally, I get some number I get a lambda d, which is not very important, lambda to the power d, and I get my logarithm of 1 plus lambda minus 2, the second derivative of v. For phi renormalized. Okay, and that comes from the one loop quantum corrections. Okay? And this coefficient A comes out from this, and this coefficient A is equal to 1 over 4 pi to the power d over 2 times gamma of d over 2, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so that's some number. Okay. So now, this tells you how, when I integrate as written here, from lambda to lambda 1 minus ds, that tells me how the renormalization, how the potential changes. And that's a differential equation in ds. It's dependent on ds. So now you may ask, what's happening when I go from lambda to lambda divided by some big S? So what's happening if I perform a renormalization group transformation by integrating on all the momenta between lambda and lambda divided by some capital S, where this capital S is called the scaling factor. It's a number. Okay? Well, you just have to integrate out your small transformation. And by doing that, you start from a potential V or phi, and you end up with a renormalized potential that I'm going to call Vs of phi, which is the renormalized potential. Okay? And so S is the scaling factor, Vs is the renormalized potential, and this is just tells you how for an infinitesimal change of S, this vary. But in fact, if I've changed between S equal 1 and 1 equal 1 minus S, so you work out when you do that, in fact, you are doing a linear transformation of the logarithm of something. So in fact, you get this equation becomes a renormalization group flow equation in the space of local potential, which is of the following form. This is just the variation of the potential, so I can rewrite it as a derivative with respect to the logarithm of the scale factor, because S over ds corresponds to the d of little s here. And I get d of Vs, so Vs is a function of phi. I get d Vs of phi minus d minus 2 over 2 phi d over d phi of Vs of phi plus a. And now, since everything depends in a simple way of lambda, I'm going to normalize things so that lambda equal 1. So lambda is my unit. Lambda is my unit of cutoff. I'm in a Wilsonian scheme, so lambda is fixed. So I can choose units where lambda is equal to 1. Okay, and then this becomes logarithm of 1 plus second derivative with respect to phi squared of Vs of phi. Okay. So this is the renormalization group flow equation for the potential in the space of local potential in the approximation I'm calling in the space of potential. Yeah. In the local potential approximation. Okay. And the fact that it's called the local potential approximation is in fact contained in this approximation, where we neglect the special dependence on the effective potential. We assume that only the potential in the action is renormalized, and there is no renormalization of the grad phi squared terms. So we assume that there is no field or wave function renormalization, which is just an approximation. Okay. Okay. And basically, so the local potential approximation that assumes that we neglect no d phi squared renormalization. And we keep only the one loop diagrams. Because we have used just the one loop approximation of the effective action. Okay. So we get an interesting equation because that's a renormalization group flow equation which tells you how the potential of the action varies with the scale. And this term in linear, it would be a linear partial differential equation, but this term in nonlinear. This is this term that contains the physics. And well, one can study this equation in the space of all polynomial potential, for instance. One can do some global analysis. Because now, this space, we have a flow in an infinite dimensional space of coupling, the space of all polynomials V of phi. Okay, but so it can be studied globally. It's an interesting question, but we are going to, in fact, the simplest idea is it can be truncated. And this gives already some very good insights of what's going on. So let us truncate it. So first truncation phi to the 4. We take a potential of the form V equal T over 2 phi squared plus, and I'm going to write this in the following way, G over factorial 4 phi to the 4. So V prime is T phi plus G over 6 phi cube, and the second derivative of phi is T plus g over 2 phi squared. I expand this equation, so I get 4 s d over s of the potential v of phi. What do I get? I get d phi squared minus d minus 2 over 2 times 2. No, I get t over 2 times d minus 2. I'm sorry, d. D minus 2 over 2 times T phi squared. So I am writing the first term plus G over factorial 4 d minus d minus 2 over 2 times 12, because that's, I have two derivatives, times, no, that cannot be true, 5 to the 4. What did I did? I have a g to the 4 minus, no, that's OK, 4 divided by 3. OK, plus a. And then I'm expanding my log. So I can write this as log of 1 plus t plus g over 2 phi squared. Okay? Oh, no, no, there is no 12, I'm sorry. That's d over 2 over 2 times 4, of course. That's the first derivative. That's what I got. Puzzle. Okay. And so what I get is t over 2 times 2. 2 times t over 2 phi squared plus d minus 4 d over 2, so as it's 2d, so I get, in fact, d minus 4 times g over factorial 4 phi to the 4. Let me okay. And then I get plus a, and what I get is my factor here. And let me expand this. Assume that t is g is small. Well, you can expand it more carefully, but expand in phi, but I'm going to expand it in t and g and phi squared. So I assume that t and g are small. Okay? And I'm going to truncate at order phi 4. So what do I get? I expand the log. So I get t. Well, that's a constant that comes out from it. Plus g over 2 pi squared minus 1 half of t squared plus tg phi squared plus g squared over 4 phi 4. Okay. Well, these terms are just constant. They state that the potential is renormalized, so that I don't care. And what I get finally is that, you see, I see that the coefficient of phi squared gets renormalized. And the coefficient of phi 4 gets renormalized. So if I rewrite my potential V renormalized Vs of phi as Ts over 2 phi squared Gs over factorial 4 phi to the 4, I end up with an equation which is that S d over ds of ts equal 2 ts. The 2 comes from this one. And then I have terms that are proportional to g. And I get, if I'm not mistaken, I get a factor that is a times g, there is a factor here, G minus TG. Okay? And I get a renormalization group flow equation for GS, which is D minus 4. GS plus A times minus 3 times GS squared. Because I have this comes from this term. And there is a factorial. Okay. Good. So, this is just, in fact, the minus 3 times the coefficient that turns out for A to be the 1 over 4 pi squared D equal 4 that we had, because we had this coefficient A, which was written somewhere here. So for D equal 4, A equal 1 over 4 pi squared times gamma of 2, which is 1. So this coefficient A is 1 over 4 pi squared when D equal 4. So you see that this flow is just minus the beta function. So I don't know what's which, but let us call this the Wilson. I call the WT of TS and GS. It's a function of T and G, of course. And let us call it this W of G of TS and GS. So let me call this the Wilson beta function. They are defined by how the coupling constant vary with the scale. And in fact, it turns out that this Wilson beta function W, Wilson, if you want, is just minus the beta of Callan-Simoncic. Okay, and that's not a surprise. A Wilson beta function is defined by how S over DS of some coupling constant vary, while the Callan-Simoncic beta function are mu d over d mu of the same coupling constant. And S measure a scale in real space. And I perform a renormalization group transformation. I go see what's going on at larger and larger distance, where mu is an transformation in energy. So that's the opposite. Yes?
So I'm a bit confused, because if you increase S, so what are we doing here? We are integrating out something.
Yes.
And then we rescale it back to the
yes.
same lambda. So the renormalization scale mu is increased. In this rescaling, is getting increased, right?
In some sense, no, it's becoming decreasing. Because when I perform a renormalization group transformation in the Wilson framework, I am just, well, let us view it in real space. In real space, you have a series that is defined, for instance, of the lattice. Okay? You make some coarse graining. So you perform first a coarse graining is equivalent to integrate over between lambda and lambda divided by some scale factor. You get a series that is defined now in your space on a bigger lattice. Then you perform your rescaling. Performing rescaling means going from K to K renormalized equal K times S. So that and then you get a renormalized theory given by some action here. If I start from a potential V of phi, I end up with a theory that is described by the potential V of S. You see? So now, what I'm comparing, so the theory described by V of S is exactly equivalent to the theory defined by V. I simply integrated over some of the degrees of freedom to get an effective action, but then the full theory is defined by integrating over all the degrees of freedom. But now, if you compare, so what is equivalent is, if I compare now a correlation function between some point at the distance L in the renormalized theory, I don't have to compare this with, this is not equivalent to the correlation function here, because I perform the rescaling. This is equivalent to a correlation function on a distance L divided by S. You see? So the renormalized theory gives you information of what's going on in the original theory at large distances. Okay? So this S factor is really tells you how the physics change when you look at observable in the theory at larger and larger distance. So it's the inverse of looking at what's going on in the, in a given theory at higher and higher energies. Because looking at what's happening in the theory at higher and higher energy means looking at what's happening in the theory at smaller and smaller distance. Okay.
So in my, if in my original picture I renormalize at some scale L,
yes,
then in my new picture I renormalize at a scale which is less than L.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So that means my renormalization scale mu, as momentum scale is increasing, right?
I start to be confused by this mixing.
So I'm just saying that. Let's say I renormalize my things at correlation length. Correlation length by 2.
Yes.
So correlation length is decreasing when I do this RG transformation. That means that
I don't know. It may have increased or decreased. Here I'm just discussing what's going on, which observable have to be compared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, whether things increase or decreases is contained in the flow of the coupling constant of the parameter.
No, so I understand that. But I mean, it seems to me that the Wilsonian beta function should be the same as the
no, with this, the Wilsonian beta function defined in this way, that's usually the way they are defined in books, in textbooks, are minus the renormalization of beta function in Kalan semantic sense. But just because we are considering, that's what we said here. That's because we are considering what we are defining as renormalization group transformation are just going in the opposite way. Same variable, but going from small to large or from large to small. So the two definitions are consistent. Okay, and let me just, I won't have time to give you, but let's say just to state just two results. First, in D equal 4, we recover the renormalization group beta functions of perturbation theory, namely beta of G is 3 over 4 pi squared. G squared. And now, if D is less than 4 and you draw this renormalization group flow, I'm just going to show you very quickly the picture, and we are going to discuss that more tomorrow. In the TG plane, namely the phi square term, so this is the mass, and G square, this is the coupling, this randomization group flow has the following feature. It has a fixed point at G star, where this is equal to this, so G star equal no, there is a 4 minus B, I'm sorry. Minus, so this has to be positive. No, that's true. No, so sorry, I made a mistake. So 4 minus B. Because there is a minus B. No, there is a d minus 40, so this is a 4 minus d. The sign is very important. There is a fixed point at 4 minus d divided by 3 times this constant a. But this fixed point is also for some t non-zero. Basically, this has to be equal to this. So there is a fixed point here. Point. And the randomization group flow in the small energy or large distance. So this corresponds to what we call the infrared randomization group flow. Goes in this way. They go like, so the fixed point, they go like this, and they, so this is a Gaussian fixed point. They're attracted toward this fixed point, but it has one unstable direction and one stable direction. So this stable manifold corresponds to what is called the critical surface of the Ising model. If you are here, the mass becomes large. So there is one minima you are in the symmetric phase, where the potential is like that. Here you have in the broken phase, where the potential is like that. And here, this is the fixed points that govern, for instance, the physics of the Ising model. So this is the Ising fixed point. Okay, so we are going to discuss that a bit more tomorrow, but I hope you got the picture. Okay. Thank you.